the beauty of a Wednesday morning, even in a cloudy day. Looking outside, a little bit overcast, but that's okay. We are, after all, into the autumnal equinox, which does mean you'll get some days like this. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us. Happy to be with you up until the noon hour. At noon, Chad Hastings and Trey Elling, Ronald John Elling III, as I know him, bring you Shirts and Skins noon. Then at the 3 o'clock hour, taking us through the drive home, will be RBKD, the triple option, Rod Babers, Brad Keller, Kevin Dunn. But for these proceedings, you have my co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County, and a proud graduate of Florence High School and a former all-district offensive lineman of the Florence Buffaloes. But you know him best from his fabulous work at Horns 24/7. I'm talking, of course, about Jeff Howe.
It's work. I don't know if it's fabulous, but it's work. Right now,
and that's steady, and that's good, right? Yeah,
exactly. Right now, Craig, getting up a story on the matchup for the little college hoops on a Wednesday. The matchup for the actually, Snoop, can I get a breaking news sound?
How about some breaking news,
Snoop Daniel, our esteemed producer, a man behind the glass. The matchup for the Big 12 SEC Challenge is set for January 30th, 2021.
And when you told me this matchup when I first walked in, you could have knocked me over with a feather with the choice of the team that Texas is going to play.
How about January 30th, 2021, Texas making the trip to Rupp Arena to face Kentucky?
My goodness. The things that I had heard was that of course, these matchups, as we know, in the Big 12 SEC are kind of made for TV, for ESPN. And the rumblings and rumors I've been hearing two destinations, either of which would have been really interesting, because Texas had to be on the road this year for it.
Right.
One was College Station, and the other was Knoxville, Tennessee.
Either would have had some juice.
Yeah, would have been interesting. But instead, it's back to Rupp Arena, where they played Kentucky a few years ago when Isaiah Taylor had a really good game. And I remember John Calipari on doing his post-game show inside the arena when we were packing up to go, and he was talking about, get ready because, this program's coming, they'll be back and all that. And that was the year Texas ended up going to the second round of the tournament, lost to Michigan in the second round in 2013, 2014, I believe it was. So, anyway, it was quite the experience. That was my first time to go to Rupp Arena. I ended up going the next year to do women's Sweet 16 game there. So I've been there a couple of times, but wow, really? Kentucky?
Kentucky, Craig. Kentucky.
Okay. It's got its own storyline, with Jay Lucas now on John Calipari's staff.
And this is on top of, this is a, I know football is the topic at hand. And again, somebody's asking us to repeat the date. That's January 30th. Of 21.
It's always on the back end of January.
Yes, January 30th. Mm-hmm. That'll be Texas at Kentucky. This is a Texas schedule where you're already in the Maui Invitational, which is going to be played in Asheville this
year. The Maui Asheville Invitational.
So you're the Texas top of the bracket. They have Davidson in the first round.
That's
if
correct.
If they win that, they get the winner of Indiana Providence, which we know that Providence series hasn't gone
right
the way Shaka Smart would have wanted to the last two times they faced Providence. North Carolina is one of the teams in the bottom half of that bracket. If Texas were to make it to the championship game, you've still got the, what do they call it? It's the Big 12 Big East battle, I think is what they call it.
Yeah.
Which has that deal been final? Like the Villanova game got reported and it was out there. I don't know that it ever got officially announced,
but it will be.
Okay.
I can just tell you that much. I know that you expect it to happen, even though it hasn't been official. The reason why it hasn't been officially announced, I think, is the television arrangements on the start time. Because the women are going to be playing Texas A&M that day, and it's going to be a doubleheader at the Irwin Center, maybe day-night,
right.
But so there are television things to work through with that. But you can kind of pencil those in.
So you've got the Maui. You've got the Villanova game.
Yeah.
You've got the trip to Kentucky.
Yep.
It's a pretty hellacious non-conference schedule.
Yeah. Gonzaga not on the schedule after the reworking of the schedule due to the pandemic. They'll play 27 games this year instead of 31. Those who were going to play 31, including the tournaments where, you know, you are quote unquote charged to your schedule for only one game when you get to play three, like if you were due to play in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. which is going to be in South Dakota, by the way, or Maui, which will be in Asheville, or Orlando, which will still be in Orlando, because they've proven they can do a bubble in Orlando. Those events, those special event type things, you only get quote-unquote charged on the NCAA docket, so to speak, in terms of your scheduling for one game, and you get to play three because it's in a tournament setting for that weekend. So in that environment, expect Texas to have 31 games.
So they go like old school college football with this, where they had the rule that if you played at Hawaii, you could play the extra game.
Yeah,
that's just some weird scheduling quirks.
Yeah,
like that.
That was the deal. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's and yesterday, Craig, if anybody missed it, the season opener for Longhorns men's basketball. If I could talk right this morning, sixth season of the Shaka Smart era begins November 25th.
Yep.
At the Drum, hosting UTRGV. Now I don't expect everybody to get as excited about RGV as they are for this Kentucky matchup. But
right.
Nonetheless, that's when it begins, Craig. So as of Sunday, it'll be a month away from the start of basketball season.
Right, and I believe there will be a women's game on the same day. Expect this. That's the day before Thanksgiving, by the way, the 25th. Expect this, that you will see this year, because of what's happened with the pandemic and scheduling and shrunken calendar dates, you'll see more men's and women both playing at home on the same day than you've ever seen before. I think it's going to happen three times. I think it may happen three times before all is said. Now, we haven't even seen the Big 12 schedule yet, other than the first couple of games.
Right. You've got the two December games where Texas will have, I believe it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, I think it's at Baylor on December 13th.
A Sunday.
And then on the 20th, the following Sunday, it's Oklahoma State at home.
That's right. All right. So you'll have that. So they're having to make up some time quickly because they're starting on November 2 weeks later on November 25th, not on November 10th, which was the prior starting day.
Hey, real quick, and this is a great point to bring in Snoop Daniel for the discussion. Snoop, you saw a lot of Greg Brown in his time at Vandegrift on the court.
A lot, over 4 years of varsity.
Have you seen some of the videos and practice photos that have gotten out of Greg Brown?
He's a monster.
Like, this is a testament to Andrea Hootie and the job she can do in strength conditioning in a basketball program. Greg Brown's up to 242 pounds.
Look at his daddy.
And looks awesome.
Yeah. Now I'm saying, like, Greg has always been skinny mini, but he has been lifting weights. I'll say that. But if you look at his dad, once he gets old, he's going to boop. I don't know if that's the correct sound effect, but he's going to get swole.
Like anything Andrew Jones does on the court kind of trumps everything, in my opinion, when you talk about men's basketball developments. So other than Andrew Jones, who, by the way, looks in great shape himself, like the fact that Greg Brown's body has gone where it has in a short amount of time, if you're a Texas man, I don't know how you can't just be giddy waiting to watch this guy on the court.
True enough. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. So there's your Texas basketball update thing there for you.
Can I go to some games, please?
What?
I just want to go to as many games as possible. For UT basketball.
I mean, like, you want a station credential?
What are you asking me for? What do you want?
Because you're the voice of the Longhorns. I'm asking the...
That and 450 will get you a coffee, just like the one that I... Here, right here. This one right here that I got at Starbucks this morning. So, yeah, that 450. We'll work out some arrangements between you and BK, you know, fighting over the credential to go and stuff like that. So, yeah, we'll work on that.
Okay.
It's a new world now. It's a new world with covering games, you know, both of football and what will be basketball. It's going to be a pretty interesting time the way that they're still finalizing a lot of things they're going to do courtside. But if you've been to a Texas volleyball game, you've seen those, like, glass stalls almost.
I've seen volleyball on TV.
Yeah. So you kind of have that. Of course, it's going to be kind of like that with basketball as well. So it'll be a little bit different. We'll be somewhat hermetically sealed, so to speak. So anyway, there's that. We'll get to some other topics. Well, normally, just to let folks know, normally, obviously on Wednesday, We visit with Todd Dodge, head coach of the Westlake Chaparrals. We're not going to visit with Todd this week. He had asked if because they're still trying to get their arms around everything that's going on with their program because they had the COVID issues that came up. So their game with Bowie has been postponed to November 12th. So he asked if he could, if they could step aside on this week because they're dealing with other things. And I said, no problem, no worries about it. We'll get back on the beam with Todd next week. So we won't do that. But we've got other things. Gene Watson, director of pro scouting of the Kansas City Royals, will join us in the 11 o'clock hour. Gene is on record as going with the Dodgers to win the World Series in six games. He wanted me to, he couldn't come on with us yesterday because of organizational meetings. And since the World Series was starting last night, he was like, look, in case people are wanting to know, where I would lean, Dodgers in six. So far, the prediction looks okay. We had somebody on the Specs text line, 337-3776, said, Craig, I was the one for that text about Kershaw hopefully not pitching game one. I'm glad he proved me wrong. I know it's only one game, but it's a good start. Was a good start, and like I said, they really didn't have much choice on their starting pitcher for last night. But you know what? They didn't need another choice. He pitched really well.
It's still Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah.
What are these people thinking?
Well, I think John Smoltz has made some good points. Now, obviously, I was at the game last night, so I didn't watch the telecast, but I DVR'd it. And from what everybody's telling me, I need to go back and look at the DVR because apparently there was a television appearance by.
Well, that's the big question. Right. Let's shelve the Kershaw talk for just a second.
All right.
The big question coming out of this world, not just are you going to go get your free taco courtesy of that first Mookie Betts stolen
base. What is that,
October
29th, I think it is?
Yeah, because Mookie Betts stole a base last night. Everybody gets a free taco at Taco Bell. So go get some gastrointestinal issues, America. How about it? But Craig, the million-dollar question coming out of that game last night.
Yeah.
What were you eating when the Fox camera caught you in your seat?
For folks who don't know, it was early in the game. And Isaiah Collier, of course, Bucky and Aaron's producer, Zay saw it. And my phone had already started to kind of light up from folks that, hey, just saw you on Fox doing a fan stand shot. And I was like, really? And then Kevin Dunn, among others, said, hey, I just saw you guys. And it was myself and Linda, of course, my girlfriend, and then my old buddy Alex and his wife Elaine, who live up there. So the four of us were sitting there, and they were very nice seats from I purchased from none other than our good friend and colleague Greg Tepper, managing editor at Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, who's a Ranger season ticket holder, and he and his brother split the four season tickets. And so they were able to buy their seats, at least really good seats. They were a few rows up. I think I was on the 18th row, almost behind home plate, just to the third base side of it. And so we were there, and Fox was doing an early camera shot swing around. And you see me, because Isaiah tweeted this out, there, and I've got a mask on because you are required to wear your mask in the stands except when you are actively eating or drinking. And I had a mask. Well, we took two or three masks to the ballpark yesterday because, they get worn down, all this other kind of stuff. The one particular one I was wearing at the time is one of those Dodger face masks like what Dave Roberts wears and some of the others. And I like it. It looks nice. Now, the one thing is it's a little scratchy. It's not as soft as some of the other cotton ones or some of the other, other material ones. So the answer to your question, Jeff, I wasn't eating anything, although there were some who thought I was, like, eating a booger or something. But it was what I actually did.
Craig did not go Kevin Durant on camera.
I did not.
Last night.
You can actually see my thumb come up one side of the nose and finger on the other side to scratch. My nose was itching, and I scratched it. The answer to your question, what did I eat, what did I end up eating, I had a hot dog and a bag of peanuts, which I always do at a ball game. just I wasn't eating anything at that particular moment. I was scratching my nose. So that's what that was when the camera caught that.
And by the way, you remember for your birthday, Craig, Linda got you some the Dodger Stadium peanuts.
Yeah, and took two bags of them to the game last night. Here's the thing, also, if you wind up going to the series in Arlington, and I think BK's going to game four, if you wind up being fortunate enough to go, you cannot carry anything into the ballpark, ladies. No purses of any kind. No clear bags. Nothing. No carrying apparatus can go in. But if you can put something in your pocket, you know, for you guys, if you want to stuff your pants, so to speak, you know, with something, whatever. So I had Linda had given me this box of bags of peanuts from the Dodgers as a birthday gift, and I had a few bags left sealed up. So yeah, I put one down in the pocket, and they allow you to do that. The one thing they do allow you to carry in is one bottle of water, 1 liter or less, unflavored. It'll be unflavored. Regular water.
Really?
Yeah. Because then it kind of qualifies as a soft drink, I think, or a soda or something like that. So you can carry in one bottle of water if it's 1 liter or less, unflavored water. We didn't do that. We actually took water with it and then forgot to take it in. But I had the one bag of peanuts, so I did take that in. But I bought a hot dog. I had a hot dog, and at the time that the camera came over, I think I always have one beer, the home beer of the team there, of whatever ballpark I'm in. And I think I had that, and then I had one Dr. Pepper later before driving home. So, but I had a hot dog, but I hadn't started eating yet. So, to answer your question, the million-dollar question, as you say, I'm scratching my nose.
Yeah, that's what it was. We already got one text that said, sure, Craig. Specs text line is open, 337-3776, if you want to rib Craig about what okay. He was or wasn't eating at the game last night.
It's okay. By the way, since we're talking about this, yeah, and Clayton Kershaw did really well last night. But if you watch the game... You know that several guys did well. Cody Bellinger had 2-run homer to get things off in gear for them. But most folks came away from the game talking about Mookie Betts with what he did. And if you get the Athletic, read Jason Stark's piece today, Weird and Wild from World Series Game 1 is the title of it. This is the history that happened last night. He says, this happened in just one spin through the Dodgers lineup. In other words, the time it took for 9 batters to come to the plate in the 5th and 6th innings. As Corey Seager stepped in to hit with no outs in the 5th, Betts was already on first base after a walk. Then he did this. He stole second with Seager hitting. Then he stole third as part of a double steal with Justin Turner hitting. He got a ridiculous jump and scored from third on a ground ball to the first baseman with the infield in. Then he came up to lead off the 6th and hit his first home run of October. And Jason Stark says, we'll leave out the scoring from third part and just focus on this. 2 stolen bases and a home run in one spin through the batting order. Who else has done that in a postseason game? The answer? Nobody. It's never been done, according to Stats Perform, not in a World Series game, not in any game of any round of postseason. And he said, okay, all right, what if we just look for a player who's done that in a whole game? 2 steals and a homer. Never mind one spin through the batting order, just a whole game. And it's happened one time in a World Series. Chase Utley for Philadelphia, also against Tampa Bay, 12 years ago in 2008. And you said, what about 2 stolen bases and a homer in any other postseason game? 5 times. Shane Victorino, 2008 NLDS.
Phillies.
Jose Reyes, 2006 NLCS. Reggie Sanders for the Reds in the 95 NLDS. Bert Campaneris for the A's in 73 in the American League Championship Series. And, wait for it, Tommy Agee of the Miracle Mets, 1969. This was in the NLCS. And he said, so what about 2 steals and a walk?
Oh, I love this one.
He says, thanks to ESPN Stats and Info for this epic tidbit. Now let's take Mookie's home run out of the mix and just hone in on what he did in the 5th inning. Walk, stolen base, stolen base. Only one other player in World Series history has ever jammed a walk and 2 stolen bases in the same inning.
Before you do that, Craig, Snoop, can you guess who this was?
Or do you know?
No, I'm so enthralled with this conversation. Please.
Take a guess. Just take a shot.
Ricky Henderson?
You know what? That's a pretty good guess.
That's a damn good guess, actually.
It's not correct, but it's a pretty good guess. You would think you'd be on the right track. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth. Game two, fifth inning, 1921 World Series against the Giants. But he ended up not scoring in the inning.
Look at the Bambino swiping bags.
And he didn't homer in the game. He said, so obviously he was no Mookie Betts. He didn't hit a homer in that game, and he didn't score. And you say, Babe Ruth stole two bases? Babe Ruth, when it comes to the stolen base department, is best known for being the final out in the 1926 World Series when he tried to steal second, when he drew a walk in the ninth of Game 7 from Grover Cleveland Alexander and tried to steal second base and was thrown out by like a mile and a half with a head-first slide. With Lou Gehrig at the plate.
Yep.
All right, so that's how that World Series ended. But he actually stole two bases after being walked in 1921. He was a little more svelte back then. He hadn't gotten the full Babe size
in 21. The Bambino looked like Juan Pierre in his prime. Scooting
around
the bases.
Okay, so to continue. What about one stolen base and a home run? One stolen base and a home run. Has it happened? Yes. No player before Mookie, however, had done it in a World Series in almost 30 years. See if you remember this game, fellas. Lenny Dykstra, Game 4, 93 World Series.
Was that like the 15-13 game?
15-14.
Yeah.
15-14. Very good. He stole second in the first inning off Todd Stottlemyer and then homered off Stottlemyer when his turn came around to hit in the second inning. So, again, that's the one turn through the lineup. Now, all told, there's 11 other players who have had a stolen base and a homer in World Series history. Almost all of them were in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Now, listen to this name group. The earliest, Mickey Mantle, 1956, Game 4. Kirby Puckett, 91, Game 6. That's the we'll see you tomorrow night game.
Puckett was huge in that Game 6.
Yeah, hit the walk-off home run. Willie Randolph. Game 6, 81. Pleasant memories. Dodgers won that game in the World Series. Davey Lopes, Game 4 for the Dodgers, 77. They lost that one. Wes Parker for the Dodgers, Game 4 in 65. And finally, what about Mookie history? Finally, Mookie Betts has now played in 883 games in the big leagues if you count the postseason. You know how many times he'd swiped two bases and homered in one turn of the order in his previous 882? That would be exactly once. 5 years ago, April of 2015, Red Sox Nationals stole second, stole third, and homered off Jordan Zimmerman. At the time, it was his seventh career home run, seventh and eighth steal. So anyway,
played in the infield, too, at that point.
I've got one more Mookie Betts factoid for you, Craig, and thanks to Bucky and Aaron for bringing this one to my attention. Mookie Betts and Cody Bellinger are the fifth pair of former MVP teammates to go yard in the same World Series game. First time it's been done since Jeff Kent and Barry Bonds did it for the Giants in 2002.
When they went on to lose to the Angels. Yeah.
When Dusty Baker gave Russ Ortiz the ball.
Yeah.
As a souvenir.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it didn't work out so well. And finally, one other on the Tampa Bay side of things. Tyler Glasnow threw 112 pitches for the Rays last night to get 13 outs. 112 pitches to get 13 outs. According to Jason Stark, that's really hard to do. It's so hard to do, in fact, that no pitcher in the history of the Rays franchise had ever thrown that many pitches and gotten that few outs, regular season or postseason, according to the fabulous Baseball Reference Stathead search engine. It is. It's outstanding. The pitch count era only goes back 33 seasons, but no pitcher in all those years had ever done that in a postseason game either. So that was how unique last night's game was, to say nothing of the fact that it was historic in that it was the first ever true neutral site in the modern era for two teams to play a World Series game. So if you were watching it last night, you got to see quite a bit of history that happened. So
good stuff, Craig. And by the way, the Babe Ruth fact, it brought up a nice conversation between Craig and I before the show. I just needed the definitive Babe Ruth book, and Craig's got me on the right track because I've always been fascinated by Babe Ruth. I've just been too lazy to really dive into all the Bambino's exploits.
One of the most extraordinary human interest stories, I think, in American history, let alone sports history and obvious baseball history.
Yeah. So I'm gonna get into that. And I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah,
good started stuff reading there. up on the Bambino.
All right, so there's our World Series stuff. Come on, somebody says ain't going to lie to kick it, Craig. Okay, he said, okay, we get Mookie's a great player. It's only one game. That's exactly right. It is only one game, and I'm glad you brought that up, Texter, because they brought that up to Clayton Kershaw last night about wasn't it great, and all this other kind of stuff. And Kershaw was like,
job yeah, not finished.
Yeah. And he said, yeah, there's, you know, we want to, you're right. We kind of, we got to, you know, continue to put our head down and go forward. And the reason why I say that is only three times in World Series history has a team, let's see, maybe it's only twice, been to a World Series three times in four games and lost all of them and never won and didn't win one. Giants, 1911, 1912, 1913. Tigers, 1907, 1908, 1909. They're the only teams in history to play in three World Series in either a three-year or four-year span and not win it at least once. So, yeah, they kind of know what's ahead of them there, and it's a great text on that. It is only one game. Not only is it only one game, what you've got for Tampa Bay tonight is you got Blake Snell, their ace going, and the Dodgers have a bullpen game going. They got the cat daddy. They got Tony Gonsolin starting, but they're going to have several other guys out of that. And for Tampa Bay, it's really crucial to get even in this because you say, okay, well, even if they lose it and they fall behind two games to none, it's proven you can come back. Yes, you can. But if you've lost the first two games with your two aces, it's a different issue.
Yep.
So tonight really is crucial for the Rays. On the other hand, if the Dodgers are able to get it, and then you have a day off, and then you come back on Friday with Walker Buehler against, as you like to call him, Charlie Effin Morton on Friday, that could be interesting.
When he gets to the postseason, he is most definitely Charlie Effin Morton.
Well, he was against the Dodgers in Game 7 3 years ago, I can tell you that.
Well, he was against Astros on Saturday.
Yeah, so it's a great text, and it's a great point for all of those extraordinary numbers. One game. And my whole point of the whole thing was just pointing out the very unique quality of that game from both sides of it, from the Tampa Bay side and from the Los Angeles side, the weird things and the unusual things that happened in that.
So we've hit the World Series.
Yep.
Even hit some college basketball.
Yep.
You want to get back to some football next?
That's next when we continue with Light the Tower. We also, of course, have Inconceivable coming up, and Gene Watson joins us in the 11 o'clock hour as well. So this is Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on The Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Bucky and Aaron.
You ever had a pair? Would you ever want a talking bird? I think that'd be very annoying.
I did have one in Boston when I moved into an apartment.
All right, Snoop, who said it was okay to go with Billy Idol this morning, okay? Who said that? Really?
It had a nice build-up.
Okay. All right. It is time for our football notes segment here, and it's brought to you, as always, by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Check them out online at cedarparkgaragedoors.com.
I want to get into a little Sam Ehlinger talk, Craig, and I know yesterday a lot of the talk around Sam was centered around what he had to say about the eyes of Texas. If you guys want to get into that on the text line, I guess go ahead. I'm moving on to football at this point, but take that for whatever you want. You can go to Horns 24/7. We got a breakdown of what both he and Taquan Graham had to say yesterday. But, Craig, when I look at this football team and the problem, and we talk about just kind of the regression with this team on the field right now, and we heard Tom Herman say it coming out of the Oklahoma game, both in the post game and the bye week news conference, and he even talked about it a little bit yesterday or on Monday in regards to the run game, trying to find an identity on offense. Well, I know exactly what your identity on offense is. It's put the ball in Sam Ehlinger's hands and hope for the best. That's really what the offense is boiled down to. And not so much this season, but I think this is just kind of a microcosm of when we write the book on Sam Ehlinger, when you have kind of the definitive Sam Ehlinger narrative at the end of his career, kind of his track record against Oklahoma is going to be kind of what Sam Ehlinger's career is. Robust numbers, puts you in a position to win a lot of games, but at times the stuff around him, whether it be the run game, defense, special teams, there was always a leaky valve somewhere that kept that thing from hitting on all cylinders. Craig, in Sam Ehlinger's five Oklahoma games, this is including the Big 12 championship game, I want to run these numbers down for you.
Okay.
Completion rate, 60.7%, so roughly 61% of his passes.
Right.
Right around
which, by the way, is his season number. Right this year is 61%.
287.6 yards passing per game. Seven touchdown passes, three interceptions, only two of those in the regular season. But the two interceptions he had 2 weeks ago in the Cotton Bowl, it's only two times he's thrown interceptions against Oklahoma in a regular season game. His other one came in the Big 12 championship game. Now, here's his rushing numbers. 323 yards, 3.2 yards per carry. Mm-hmm. But when the NCAA tracks stats, they factor in sack yardage.
Yep.
And Sam Craig, in five games against Oklahoma, he's been sacked 21 times and lost 136 rushing yards as a result.
Yeah, that'll skew your rushing average.
So, and even then, he was sacked six times, lost 34 yards in the game 2 weeks ago, still finished with 112 on the ground. So 323 yards, 3.2 yards per carry. Sam Ehlinger in five games against Oklahoma, about 12 rushing touchdowns. Yet, unless there's a rematch between the two in the Big 12 championship game, which I think we all agree is
unlikely,
pretty far-fetched at this point, he's going to finish his time against Oklahoma 1-4. And that's just, and again, to your point, when you look at some of Sam's numbers this season and compare them to kind of the overall product, it really mirrors it, and it's that unfortunate. Sam Ehlinger is going to go down as the most statistically prolific quarterback, not named Colt McCoy, in the history of this program.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a team right now that you're seriously wondering, can they win enough games to get to 500? That's just where the product is right now. It's really unfortunate for a quarterback who his play on the field is not just the intangibles we always talk about with Sam, but go look at his actual play. And Craig, Sam Ehlinger this season through the three Big 12 games, at no point in time in the game has he been better than in the fourth quarter. I think I ran these numbers down the other day, but I'll just run them down again because, you know, one of the things I asked, actually my one question for Tom Herman, because the press conference ran long, I only got one question on Monday, was him talking about the third quarter struggles. And he got into it, said they did dive into it during the bye week. But we talked about just how bad Texas is in the third quarter, and I went over those numbers earlier this week. But Sam Ehlinger in the third quarter this year, 12 of 25, one touchdown, one interception, 84 rushing yards, three carries for 40 yards, but he did have the 36-yard run against TCU, which kind of skews those numbers a little bit. But, and this isn't even counting the overtimes, Craig. Sam Ehlinger in the fourth quarter this year, 25 of 28, five touchdowns, one interception, 287 passing yards, and 13 carries for 98 yards. You can say what you want about Sam, and has Sam been perfect? No. I think if you were to grade, Craig, his body of work through these three Big 12 games, probably a B-, B, somewhere between a C-plus and a B, depending on how tough your grading scale is.
And by the way, he would be in complete agreement with you.
Right.
He'll be the first to say, I haven't played my best. I know I can play better than what I've done. You know, he's always been like that. That's just how he's built.
And I asked him the question last year of, you know, how he looks at games where maybe the numbers are great, but, you know, they come out on the wrong end of the scoreboard, or maybe the numbers aren't great, but you win the game. He said it's real simple. He said, I look at what's on the scoreboard at the end of the day as to whether I did my job or not.
Yeah.
Win, lose, simple as that for Sam Ehlinger. But so you can fault Sam for some things. He has by no means been perfect this year, but when you need him to be really good in crunch time, Craig, granted, there's some of the better quarterbacks in the country haven't been in as many tight games as Texas has been in
right
through the first four. There's probably not a better quarterback in crunch time in the country right now than Sam Ehlinger.
He put it this way, if you're in one of those kind of games, you feel pretty good that he will do his part in the crunch time to be able to do it. And it hadn't been the case 100% of the time, including the last play of the game against Oklahoma. But by and large, for the numbers you just laid out and the other things that he's done, yeah, you do feel good about that. It's just, and I think most folks are on board with this, that there's so many other issues, and you've pointed them out, that they're trying to get fixed, trying to get remedied, trying to get improvement on as this Big 12 schedule really ramps up for them now, having played three Big 12 conference games.
And I think when you talk about helping Sam out, Craig, there's there's multiple ways that it can happen. One way for me goes back to the production or lack thereof you're getting from your running backs right now. I broke down the numbers for the three Big 12 games, and if you look at just Keontae Ingram, Roschon Johnson, Bijan Robinson, now some of these numbers we know aren't going to be that robust because Bijan Robinson missed the TCU game, and you got three carries from Roschon Johnson in the Oklahoma game before his day was done. I think we could all agree Rojo just didn't look right on those three carries, and it was pretty obvious that he was far, far from 100%. But in Big 12 play, Craig, your running backs, 59 carries for 277 yards and a touchdown, 4.7 per carry. It's not bad, right?
Right. Right.
But if you take out the explosive plays, you know, Roschon Johnson's got, I think, a 40-yard run in there. I think Keontae Ingram's got one for 36. And an explosive run is anything 10 yards or more. So the Texas running backs have eight of those in Big 12 play that have gone for 140 yards. So that's pretty much about half of your rushing yards from your running backs have come on only eight carries. If you take out those eight carries on the other 51 carries the running backs have in Big 12 play, they're only averaging 2.7 a pop. That's not going to get it done. That's when your offense gets off schedule. That's when you get into predictable down and distance. And I don't care if you're Sam Ellinger, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, whoever.
Hard to move the chains when you're consistently facing that.
And furthermore, Craig, how difficult it's been for this offense to move the football. They're 4 for 23. They've been in 3rd and 9+ in Big 12 play 23 times.
Right.
And they're 4 for 23 moving the ball. And two of those were converted by Jared Wiley. You had the 52-yard catch and run against TCU, and you had one of the best routes I've seen a Texas tight end run in years, where he had kind of a square in, used his body to shield himself from the defender. Again, I don't know why we're not seeing more Jared Wiley on the field, but yeah, raise your hand if you had Jared Wiley being this offense's go-to guy on 3rd and long situations. But that's just kind of where this offense is, Craig. They have got to stay on schedule. They have got to establish the run, because that's the brand of football Tom Herman wants to play. I throw out the numbers all the time. He's 18-0 at Texas when Texas runs the ball at least 40 times. But I don't know if he's ever said this. I've never asked him this. Actually, no, he's never said it in these terms. I think if you ask Tom Herman, like, what's the ideal kind of way you want to win games, I think Tom Herman would say, the way Bill Snyder did it, but with the kind of athletes you can recruit at Texas. And if you look at the way Texas has won games under Tom Herman when they've been good, it's been that style of play. They're forcing turnovers on defense. They're winning the physicality battle along the line of scrimmage. They're winning time of possession battle. They just kind of choke you out. They've been, when they've won games at Texas under Tom Herman, big games, they've been really good in the kicking game.
Right.
But that formula, because you can't establish the run game, because you're next to last in the country, or actually however you want to look at it, you have the second most missed tackles in the country defensively, and your special teams, it's not even a wash anymore. It's losing you games. That formula has just been completely disrupted.
Yeah, and it makes it difficult to do, to get first downs, to move the ball, to get points. I mean, all of those things for what you talked about, the stop starts. And it's interesting when you extrapolate the numbers, when you pull out, like you said, those explosive plays. And you can't, obviously, any more than you can separate the penalties. If you pull the penalties out, if you pull that, you know, you can't do it. I thought that Tom Herman made a very good point in the news conference on Monday, however anybody else felt about a lot of what he said about in the news conference. One point that he made was, he said, we're committing far too many penalties. He said one of the unique deals is the last 2 weeks we've actually committed fewer penalties than the opponent, TCU and Oklahoma. However, they've come at the worst possible times.
I think if you ask coaches,
the timing of those,
right? If you ask coaches, Craig, I think there are some penalties that, not to say you can live with, but if it's, let's say if it's a DPI, right, defensive pass interference, mm-hmm. and it's just a day where the officials are being really ticky-tack, okay, maybe that's something. At least it's a guy competing and fighting for a football.
And if it's a deep route, like a 50-yard route, and you commit the DPI 15 yards, you'll kind of take it, especially if the DB is beaten.
But the penalties that coaches at all levels of football that it just drives them nuts. It's the procedural stuff. False starts, illegal formation, jumping into the neutral zone, too many men on the field, like stuff that just, honestly, if you're just a disciplined, well-coached football team, those are the kind of penalties you just don't commit, and that's why you can label Texas as an undisciplined, sloppy, poorly coached football team, because those procedural penalties continue to happen. And when, you know, you get an illegal formation penalty that wipes out a 50-plus yard catch by Keyonte Ingram in the TCU game, that same game, you get Christian Jones called for an ineligible man downfield off of a turnover on a sudden change that wipes out a 26-yard pass to Alvante Woodard that would have got you in scoring range, and you end up getting no points on that drive. Like you said, the timing of them and the kinds of penalties they are, and those are the ones that that's
killers.
That's how you end up at 2-2, losing 2-1 possession games.
To the Specs text line, T-Bone said, "Is this what you were eating, Craig, last night?" And it's a shot of the boomstick. I did not have a boomstick last night. The week before, when I went to the NLCS, my son-in-law and my son got the boomstick, which, if you don't know what that is, it's a 2-foot-long all-beef hot dog smothered in chili, nacho cheese, jalapenos, and caramelized onions. It weighs 3 pounds. It's very thick, too. It's like the bottom part of a bat handle. And and when they got it, they so that they would, you know, be, you might say, CDC sanitized, so to speak, they took forks and knives and cut it up and separated it so they wouldn't be eating off each other. So I had them cut me off one piece of that before they got started, but it's huge. That was last week. I did not do a boomstick last week.
I didn't know, like, the construction of the boomstick. Oh, that is one just ungodly long uninterrupted beef frank.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's amazing. They had that were, yeah, it cost $27.50 also to do that.
Jeez.
But if you were to get 2-foot-long dogs, their footlongs are like $12.50, so it's in the neighborhood of that anyway. All right, speaking of crazy things like that, inconceivable. Up next, we've got that when we continue with Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
The Texas Longhorns look to snap a 2-game losing streak this Saturday afternoon when the Baylor Bears come to Austin. Pre-game with Bucky Godbolt.
Inconceivable!
You keep using the horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, yesterday it meant Bears, and I'm not talking about the Chicago NFL team, although they're 5-1.
Or the Baylor football team that we still don't know exactly who on that roster is going to show up in Austin on Saturday.
That's a good point. We hope to find out a little more about that as we go forward. But we had that story about the woman getting arrested from Virginia for feeding, unauthorized bear feeding in Tennessee. That happened this week.
I got to know if that's really on the books.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's especially in those states with a lot of wildlife and national parks and stuff like that. Well, guess what? Right here in the Lone Star State, it could be an issue. Your pet food and your garbage, remember we were talking about garbage, could be attracting bears. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Department is encouraging Texans to practice bear safety after several bear sightings in the western and southwestern portions of the state. Our friends at KXN had this story. They said last week, Texas Parks and Wildlife reported a black bear sow and her cub were spotted in the city of Del Rio. In the city.
I was going to say, yeah, it's got to be on the fringes of the state because we're you're not going to see any bears in Westlake.
And this is the unfortunate thing. It resulted in a resident shooting and killing the mother bear. You hate to see that. Incident is being investigated. Afterwards, it was discovered that the bears may have been drawn to pet food that had been left out by residents to feed stray cats. Residents are advised to secure their trash and avoid leaving pet food out in the ocean. In the open. So, you know, that's unfortunate. You hate to hear, you know, something like that happen.
That's sad, but didn't Uncle Jimbo in South Park teach us many years ago that it's okay to shoot animals if you just yell, "It's coming right for us," and then you claim self-defense?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
It's coming right for us.
You know how we always like to say, throw it in the Google engine, the words like Florida man.
Throw it in the Google machine, yeah.
Florida residents or Florida. Well, here's one. If you did the words Florida officials, okay? Florida officials say there are several people who have been charged listen carefully to this, in a trafficking operation. So what are they trafficking? You think Florida, and it could be human, you know, trafficking. No, this is trafficking of flying squirrels. Squirrels. At least seven people have been arrested and charged in what is called, quote, an elaborate organized enterprise, end quote, to smuggle Florida's flying squirrels, which are protected wildlife in the state, and then sell them, according to investigators. Up to 10,000 traps were set to capture the flying squirrels, and as many as 3,600 of the animals were shipped overseas within 3 years to be sold as exotic pets for hundreds of thousands of dollars. The investigation started last year after the commission received an anonymous tip about people illegally trapping flying squirrels in one county. The animals were captured by poachers across several counties and sold to a dealer. The animals were then laundered through the business of the dealer, who claimed they were captive bred.
You know, the tagline for the state of Florida, Craig, might as well just be, we're Oklahoma, but with beach communities.
Oklahoma with a shoreline?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Okay. One another Florida story? How about falling lizards in Florida?
Falling lizards?
Yeah, yeah. They're having issues with falling lizards because of the climate. During a cold snap back in January, residents were warned to watch out for paralyzed lizards falling from trees. So they're already cautioning people about this fall. Because they had the lowest temperatures in a decade, stunned and immobilized the lizards. It caused them to lose their grip from their usually safe perches in trees. And comatose lizards, by the way, that's going to be the name of my new fantasy football team, comatose lizards, littering the sidewalk may have been annoying for residents. For science, it is a unique opportunity to understand how the lizards, many of which aren't native to the region, are affected by extreme climate events. So going down to Florida in the winter, just be ready. You could have frozen, falling, comatose lizards.
Would you guys rather have a bird poop on you or be like smacked in the head by a lizard falling out of a tree?
If it was comatose, I'd take the lizard.
Take the comatose lizard over bird poop?
Yep.
Snoop, what about you? You got a thought on this one way or the other? Have any of you guys ever been pooped on, by the way, by a bird?
That's good luck.
Is it really?
Is it really?
Yeah, I haven't, but yes, it's good luck.
Who told you that?
Texters, let Craig and Jeff know. It is.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe somebody.
So if you're having a bad day, just go like go to Zilker Park and hang out under a tree and hope for the best.
You're going to have a good day.
Yeah, okay. They'll turn things around there. Or maybe you could get your own Cinderella. The Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth II. Is about to make one lucky Disney fan's wish come true. She's going to hire a housekeeping assistant to live and work at Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle. And so, really? You'd be the real-life Cinderella for this deal. As evidenced by the salary, by the way, the starting salary is £19,140, which equates to about $25,000 American. But you get to live in the castle. Yeah, so, I guess that's the trade-off
that
there.
Doesn't sound all that appealing.
You're not on board with that? The role will be based at either Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle. It offers a live-in option, albeit with a salary adjustment. So you may lose some of your cash there, as well as the opportunity to travel to and work at other royal residences for up to 3 months a year. Meals and travel expenses also will be provided, although not mentioned specifically in the job description. The other residences that candidates could potentially spend time at include Sandringham House, where the royals spend Christmas, and Balmoral Castle, where they spend their summer vacation. Kensington Palace is where the royals like Prince William and Kate Middleton and Princess Eugenie and her husband Jack Brooksbank live full-time. Boy, doesn't that sound like an English name?
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Jack Brooksbank.
Anyway, according to the job description on the Royal Household website, the successful applicant is expected to, quote-unquote, upkeep, clean, and care for interiors and items, ensuring they're presented to their very best. So you could be, you know, a royal housekeeper if you wanted to be for that. And finally, speaking of housekeeping.
Housekeeping?
How many times have we heard that over the years, right? Hotels waking
Such
up.
Such a great movie. Classic.
So we've kind of gotten used to calling the NFL team in the nation's capital the Washington football team, right?
Or as Troy Aikman called them, they're the dog leaving the vet wearing the cone.
Yeah, the cone of shame. Well, apparently the team is going to wear the cone of shame for at least another year.
I heard about this.
Yeah.
Man, Dan Snyder's group, they cannot get their S together for anything.
Apparently they're going to be the Washington football team. Not only are they not going to change the name the rest of this year, they probably are not going to change it next year. Their team president said Jason Wright told a Washington television station yesterday, there's a pretty good chance they'll keep the current name. He said, I think next year is fast because how the brand has to come together through uniforms, through approval processes, through the league. Next year's fast. He keeps saying that. Next year's coming fast.
What else have you guys been working on? You have one job. You have one job.
Yeah.
Get a mascot.
It's coming fast. He said, there's a pretty good chance we will still be the Washington football team next season. Could get there quicker. It's actually pretty hard to get there quickly because all the steps that need to happen.
31 other franchises in the NFL thinking, how are we going to come out of the pandemic? And you know, we got revenue money, but we're losing here. We got to end up watching this saying, hey, what are we going to call ourselves? Anybody got any ideas?
The Washington football team, who will host your Dallas Cowboys this weekend.
I'm actually going to have to watch that, aren't I?
Yeah. All right. Second hour, Light the Tower, coming up on the Horn.